time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
I think we're seeing a different way of ETFs being launched. The real kicker was governance, selling of private data. They really let down their customers repeatedly.
Drew, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure, Nate.
All right, so let's first talk about these record ETF flows in the first quarter. Absolutely obliterated the prior quarterly record. And I thought I'll just open this up to you. Give us some highlights, things that stood out to you, and then we can go from there.
Sure. I mean, the whole quarter has been a monster. We saw $65 billion in January of new assets going to U.S.-listed ETFs, $88 billion in February, and $90 billion in March. $245 billion in 3 months. That used to be a good year, not very long ago, for the total haul for the year. And I think what we're seeing, too, is just a huge influx into equity. Both U.S. and international consists of $200 billion of that $245 billion. So there's believers in the stock market. There's believers in the ETF market. And we're certainly seeing it in demand that does not seem to quit. And to top that off in the quarter, we saw two of the biggest launches ever with the social media ETF Buzz, BUZZ, coming out with $250 million on its first or second first week of trading, and it's up to $350 million. And, of course, we just saw ARK launch its space ETF, ARKX, and it, too, came out very strong with a couple $100 million off the bat and is standing around $350 million trading a lot. So it's just not seed money sitting there. So we just seen some very interesting things, both in the big picture and little picture. But I will say this. You talked about all these flashpoints in the market. You know, the people that are really pouring the money into the ETF market, you look at the funds that are up there, it's VOO, Vanguard S&P 500 ETF, the iShares Core S&P 500 ETF, IVV, IEMG, the International Fund. You know, those are big index passive funds that really don't care about the little market blowups because they're long-term holdings with a long-term horizon. And that's what index investing is to ride out these little market waves that come and go, but really don't affect the course of the ship.
Yeah, I think more than anything, that's what stood out to me in the first quarter, because I do think about everything that impacted the markets during the first quarter, the capital storming, GameStop, stimulus checks going out, the Suez Canal blockage, the Archegos blow up. I think we could probably add in the inflation boogeyman, right, and rising mm-hmm. interest rates. We had this rotation into value stocks, tech stock leadership sort of faltering. But then you look up, the S&P 500 had a 6% plus gain for the quarter. It just, with everything that went on, it didn't really feel like that. But also, you look into ETF flows, and here we are with nearly $250 billion in inflows for the quarter. That puts us on pace for $1 trillion annually. The prior record annually is $476 billion back in 2017. It's just amazing.
And the other thing that's interesting is, if you recall, just a couple of weeks ago, people were sweating a little bit. I think we had at least a 10% correction. The spiking yields were pushing down the growth funds that we had seen move, ARK funds, for instance. And now, frankly, over the last week or so, there's been a real strong reversal there. And the other thing, if you look at the flows, people were buying the dip. And the dip, I think QQQ had one of its best runs in the last few weeks in terms of new inflows. And here was, you know, that sector that was essentially getting beaten down. So investors are buying dips and they're using ETFs to do it. And if you just look at these flows, the flows increased throughout the year despite the volatility in the market and despite the leaders in tech falling by the wayside and having energy suddenly be the best performing sector, which no one is buying, by the way.
You mentioned ARK Invest. I know as much as we talk about ARK, I still think we have to spend at least a few minutes on the quarter that they had. So you mm-hmm. look at their flagship ETF, the ARK Innovation ETF, ARKK, that actually dropped about 30% peak to trial during the quarter. But you look, that thing has pulled in $6.5 billion year to date. And ARK as a whole had, again, a tremendous quarter of inflows. What do you make of ARK right now and how they're positioned moving forward?
It's all how you want to slice it. If you want to look at the quarter and say, well, they had a bad quarter, look at the year. They're still up 160-170% on RKK and RKG. You're going to hit bumps, right? It doesn't always go in a straight line up. And I think what we've seen, like I mentioned with QQQ, is we saw a bite taken there. But again, I think there's belief in these funds that they're not fly-by-night.com places that aren't making any money. They got overvalued. They've been corrected, but people keep buying them, and we're seeing the flows in ETFs. And I also looked at ARKKK this morning. I saw that the trading volume, there's $1.7 billion a day. I mean, that's just an incredible number for an ETF, and just shows you how much that is being used now, and it's just a main tool in the investor toolbox.
Well, I mentioned that pullback in ARKK. Some of their other ETFs had fairly decent drawdowns as well. But you look, all eight ARK ETFs have year-to-date inflows, and that totals over $16 billion. You mentioned the ARK Space Exploration and Innovation ETF, ticker ARKX, which we talked about last week. That thing already has like a half a billion dollars in assets. I mean, it took in $281 million on its first day.
Sure. So they're coming out with a new product that's, again, warmly received, despite the hand-wringing over, you know, Kathy Wood's star starting to fade. But people, I think, see, and you're able to see with the ARK funds. It's, transparency is the key there. Very happy to tell you what's in their funds, tell you what their trading thoughts are. So I think people are warming up to that kind of service. It is active management that we've always waited to come to the ETF world, and here it comes in a different vehicle than iShares or American Century. So I think there's a whole different wave going on here, and I think you'd expect that in the ETF industry. I think you would expect the more innovative issuers and businesses in the space than having traditional Wall Street convert, which they have been so slow to do, has allowed the door to open for somebody like Kathy Wood.
In looking at individual ETF flows during the first quarter, something that stood out to me, I saw the Spider Gold ETF, GLD, that actually had outflows of $7.5 billion during the quarter. It was the second biggest outflow loser behind only LQD, the iShares corporate bond ETF. Of course, I think rising rates hurt both gold and bonds. But the question I have for you is, I mean, I can't help but look over to Bitcoin and the year it's having. So, of course, Bitcoin is referred to as digital gold, right? But it's up 100% for the year. Do you make anything of this? Because I don't want to sound extreme, but I feel like maybe gold is sucking wind a little bit because investors are preferring Bitcoin as that store of value.
I think there's something to that for sure. The other odd thing I've kind of seen lately is back in the day, 10 years ago when I first started working with Hard Assets Investor, I followed a lot of the gold bugs and silver bugs. Peter Schiff, for instance, is now a Bitcoin investor. A guy named Dave Morgan, who's one big in the silver coin and silver space, he's a Bitcoin investor. So it's just not in, you know, consumers. I think the industry is starting to see Bitcoin as a speculative vehicle, which, let's admit, gold can be seen as that for sure, despite the idea that it's supposed to be this store of value, which clearly it's not been. So I think there is a conversion going on in terms of looking at that alternative investment that is speculative, frankly. And that's what I think is going on, seeping into that old gold bug and you know, metal world is the idea. Here's a Bitcoin that's being traded very similar to the way, you know, gold used to be traded as sort of the outlaw kind of vehicle. And here's Bitcoin. And I think the younger investors are much more warm to Bitcoin. They're more apt to go buy $300 of Bitcoin and Coinbase than they are to buy $300 worth of GLD.
Yeah, that one's just interesting to me, again, because I think if you talk to Bitcoin investors, one of their investment thesis is that with all of the stimulus we've had, the money printing, that's going to be a tailwind for Bitcoin moving forward. But that's really a case that gold investors like to use as well. But here, again, we have Bitcoin up 100% for the year. We have gold not performing well. And then you look at the largest gold ETF with $7.5 billion in outflows. It just feels like there's more to the story here.
I think there is, and I think we're going to see that play out over time. I don't think it's going to be something quickly, but I certainly think you'll be able to piece this together a lot clearer in about 5 years.
All right. Anything else that you want to recap from the first quarter, whether flows, performance, launches? I'll just give you sort of a catch-all bucket here.
Yeah, I kind of like to always look under the radar. And obviously the radar was we had buzz and we had a new ARK fund that really, you know, gathered all the attention and headlines. But I know we've talked about this a couple of times, the defined outcome ETF sector, if you will, in the marketplace. Just recently gone over 100 ETFs in that space. I think it's up to 118 now. Some $6 billion into that fund. I think they've only been around about 2-3 years. And so what is interesting is that people are using these funds. And they're not keep coming out with them because they're only having 10 or 20 million in them. There's a whole slate of those 100 funds that have more than $100 million and as high as half a billion. And so what they are sort of a hedge. So you cap your upside and you also cap your downside through what is called defined income, using flex shares to both, you know, protect yourself, but at the same time also giving up a little bit of gain. I think overall, you know, a similar S&P 500 fund is in the defined outcome space is 3% up, whereas the market S&P is 6%. But again, you gave up a little bit of that to help yourself on the downside. And if you look at the charts, the S&P 500 fell much more than these buffer funds, but also recovered quickly. So it's a nice smooth ride, thus the buffer idea. And I think it's just a great tool for financial advisors who want to put people in the market but yet have that sense that, hey, we're at all-time highs here. And again, things do not just keep going up in a straight line. So that protection there, I think, is also peace of mind for advisors, I would think.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, I look at that category. I saw last week it has now grown to over $6 billion in assets. There were a bunch of launches last week from Innovator, Pacer, Truemark, right? All in the defined outcome ETF category. And I think to what you're saying, I think given what we have seen in the markets just over the past year, even though obviously markets bounce back strongly from that 34% decline back in March of 2020, I think investors are wanting some predictability. And that's what these defined outcome ETFs can offer, where you do have that upside cap, you have a downside buffer. These are using flex options underneath the hood. And like the Innovator, the ones that they launched last week, these Innovator accelerated ETFs, these actually provide two times exposure to the upside up to a cap, but then single exposure to the downside. There's also international versions of these. Point being that this category really is expanding. And again, I think if investors do want some predictability in terms of what their best case scenario can be and worst case scenario can be, more importantly, these certainly offer that ability. But
it also speaks to the universality of the ETF structure and what it can offer and democratize to investors. Here is a fund that makes total sense. And again, most people have been riding this bull market for a while. So they're up at the top wondering, you know, am I on the froth or am I on a solid wave? So I think that this, again, is just something that is in the ETF toolbox, just like we were just speaking about. That now you have these defined outcome incomes. If you want to stay in the market, but you're a little worried about, you know, the bottom side being at all-time highs month after month, what a great tool. And I'm sure it's a, I'm not saying it's an easy sell, but I'm sure advisors like to offer that, at least to the alternative to an S&P 500 if they feel like the client is nervous.
Well, Drew, great recap from the first quarter. Let's see if we can get another quarter of $1 trillion into ETFs during the second quarter. But fun chat as always. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Nate. Always a pleasure.
That was ETF.com's Drew Voros.